the buzzer, McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, it's the world's greatest podcast. What we do is we make news. Last week it was Dan Gavitt basically laying out for you and for nobody else than us the plan for college hoops. Big day today. I don't know how many people saw this. I'm sure you did. Big Ten football is coming back. And college hoops looks to be coming back. Seth Greenberg and I must delve in, though, quickly to the NBA. I got to tell you, Seth, living in Indianapolis, watching Paul George implode again in the playoffs, because as a human being, I kind of like, oh, that's bad. But as a guy that lives here and Paul George lied and was a fraud his entire time here, it didn't hurt me one second to see that guy struggle. He and Doc Rivers deserve one another, in my opinion.
Well, I don't know about that, but I can tell you one thing. I told you yesterday, I'm not a big, gambling guy, but I told you yesterday in our conversation, I like the Nuggets. And I like the Nuggets because of their chemistry. I like the Nuggets because they have leaders. I like the Nuggets because they have a toughness. I like the Nuggets because they have resiliency. And I didn't see any of those traits in the Clippers.
None.
I love Kawhi Leonard. I think he's a tough winning player, but he needs someone with him that has great fight, great toughness, great leadership. He had Kyle Lowry, and he was the perfect complement to Kawhi Leonard. He had the culture of the Spurs, perfect complement to a guy that just basically comes to play every single night. I looked at this Clipper team, and I didn't see any of those characteristics. I didn't like their DNA. They were never committed really defending. They always thought it was just going to happen. I just thought that I didn't like their team. On the other hand, I like the joy that the Nuggets play with. I like the enthusiasm. I like to watch what Jamal Murray's been doing, to watch the Joker and how he plays and how much he loves. Every time he talks in a post-game interview, he talks about how much he loves his teammates and how much fun they're having and how much they like each other. And he loves being around these guys, man. That's the environment that creates championship culture. And I thought that was good. And I thought that the Heat game, how about Bam Adebayo block? And how about my man, Tyler Hero. All right, that dude is afraid of no one and no moment. And that was a high-level, that's going to be a 6 or 7-game series, and that's going to be a high-level series. Now, I got a question for you.
Tell me.
Why, when your team is moving the ball and getting good shots, doing the last 2 minutes of a game, do guys just give the ball to one guy, get flat, get space, and have him dribble around and take step-back threes?
You know what? I don't know if you're talking about Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I mean, like the end of the game. I mean, like run offense. Move the ball, move people. Don't let people just stand there sitting and everyone knows where their help is.
Seth, I used to think this. I always said about 5 years ago, I said, if I go back to coaching, man, am I going to study the NBA? Man, am I going to not? I'm going to study their sets. I'm going to study what they do, their movements. Because college basketball about 5 years ago was hang on to the basketball, set a high ball screen, and let's go. And the games were horrible. College basketball has evolved. College basketball runs stuff. The NBA is the worst coached basketball, I think, that we see. The NBA has absolutely no imagination. You've got guys making millions. And Brad Stevens, let's be honest, is one of the great coaches. Everybody tells me, and I love Brad. But when you don't do anything other than give the ball at the end of the game numerous times to one player, and everybody stands around. That's not coaching. I mean, hell, you could do that with nobody on the sideline. You could do that with five players on the court playing against five other players. The NBA, when somebody says that he's the coach of the year, and I have so much respect for the NBA, and I think you know that. I watch it. I study it. I talk about it every day. But the coaching in the NBA is abysmal. It's absolutely abysmal. On the offensive end. And you're seeing it in these playoffs, Seth. You're seeing Eric Spoelstra expose
a lot of people. He's good.
Move they cut, they adjust. I actually had a conversation with Eric or with Nate McMillan, who everybody thinks is this great coach. And he told me that before this year, yeah, we don't switch. We don't do this. I'm like, okay, good for you. And they get drubbed by a team that Eric Spoelstra coached. Last night, Tyler Hero, yeah, he made shots, but that damn ball's whipping around. That cut, guys are cutting down the lane. Jokic, how many cutters did he hit cutting down the lane? And you watch this NBA, I'm telling you, it is, in my opinion, I haven't seen all of European basketball, but I've seen high school, college, and the NBA. And in our world, it's the worst coached basketball that there is because, frankly, you don't need a coach, particularly late in the game.
You know, I think that's a little dress. I think preparation is really good. I just think that for some reason.
Let me ask you a question about that. Mm-hmm. What preparation do they do? I mean, I know everybody watches films. How long did it take Doc Rivers to figure out that we better run Paul George at Jamal Murray? How long did it take? Doc Rivers, right this moment, as we sit here, has not figured out how to play Jokic. Preparation isn't sitting in a film room with your guys eating pizza, having some analytics guys tell you. Preparation is what you put out on the court. And Doc Rivers, to this day, right now, hasn't figured that out and hasn't figured out how to guard Jokic and couldn't figure out you better get the ball to Murray's hands.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, here's the thing. Before I was interrupted, ball screen coverages. You can't let the other team's best two players beat you. Like, if you're going to lose to Nuggets, this is my thing. I mean, this is kind of like part of my art of the upset. You can't let the other team's best player beat you. So, I mean, whether it's trapping, whether it's switching, whether it's playing triangle and two, whether it's playing some zone, like the players in the NBA are really talented. So, like, here's the deal. You can't give them a consistent looks. You've got to change your looks. You've got to change your coverages. You got to blitz sometimes. You got to down sometimes. You got to switch sometimes. Whatever it is. But you can't let Murray and Jokic beat you. On the other side, you've got to move the ball, move people, and do something. And to me, I'm 100% with you, Spoelstra. I think that, like, those guys make – every cut they make is a scoring cut. They don't make easy cuts. They cut hard. Like Tyler Hero came off a dribble handoff to a stagger screen on a weak side in the fourth quarter. That dude came off so hard, and he came off so tight and downhill, so that off a curl, that's a scoring cut. You have to honor that cut. Sometimes these guys cut, and they don't cut where the defense has to honor them, so that they never really move the defense. So I was disappointed in the Clippers. I didn't like their team. I didn't like the DNA of their team. I like it of the Heat. I like it of the Nuggets. I think that Mike Malone has done a really, really good job with his team, as much because you could see the joy that they're playing with. You can see that they send a ton of middle ball screens, and those two guys are hard to guard, so you got to figure that out. But everyone plays to their strengths, and you don't see a lot of bad shots, and you see the ball trying to be moved, and you see offense being run. And I understand NBA players would say these guys are such great players, we're playing out of concepts. And that's great, but you can move the ball and move people and still play out of concepts. And that's where I was puzzled with the Celtics at the end of the game, because they were moving the ball pretty good. And then they stopped and they started going to basically just, Tatum missed his last seven shots. Now, let me ask you another one. Is anyone having a better NBA playoffs than John Calipari?
I'll say Mike Malone, but no. No, I mean, golly, how good are his players? You talk about Bam. We talked about Jamal Murray. No, the only one that's having – who coached Jimmy Butler in college? Was it Crean or was it Buzz Williams? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I don't either.
And Crowder. And Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder's a grown man.
Seth, to me, here's what I see. I agree totally with you. I think that the cutting to the basket by both the Denver Nuggets and the real cutting, not just, I got to move to a spot. Moving to a spot is like the big NBA buzzword. Those guys move to a spot. Sure, Duncan Robinson does, Hero does, but they cut also. It's fascinating. two things people cannot guard in modern day basketball. They cannot guard off the ball action, meaning down screen, cut, curls, whatever. They can't guard it unless they switch it. And the second thing is ball in the post, real hard, tough movement. They just can't guard it. And I think Mike Malone and I think Eric Spoelstra are exposing the entire league. I do. Now, I don't think either of them have the most talent. Like, you know, put LeBron on any team and they're pretty damn good. But I do think that those two guys are exposing the rest of the league, Seth. I do. I agree.
And I think character of the players in your team, like the Heat, and maybe that's too simplistic, but I mean, the Heat put a premium on their culture, and they put a premium on their expectation and the standard. And I think you could see that in how they play. And again, I'm sure, look, I don't know your situation with Doc. Doc's always been really, really good to me.
Yeah, he's
I
a talked great to guy.
Someone who's worked with Doc, and he said he has been unable. He's a terrific communicator, unable to reach this team. And I think because to reach a team, you've got to have someone in that locker room that is going to be your voice. Because and it's like, you know, we're going to have Tom Izzo on here in a second about a player-led team is better than a coach-led team. Well, you know what? I don't know who is leading that team. Like you know, I watched some playoffs and I say, like, I like the Bucks. I don't know what they were trying to do offensively. I mean, I couldn't say, well, they're trying to do this, trying to. When I watched the Clippers yesterday, I said, all right, when Doc is not talking, is there anyone on the floor in that organization in terms of as a player who is getting anyone to follow them? And as I watched it really close, and I've watched all their games, I don't see anyone who has the ability to get up people to follow, buy in, and elevate anyone else's play. And that's what.
Yeah, and you know, part of that. I mean, we talk so much in reputation. Like I don't know Doc Rivers. I've never met Doc Rivers. All I've ever heard about Doc Rivers, he's one of the all time great guys. You know, that's all I've ever heard. And that's great. I mean, I'm sure he is. That's wonderful. But I will say this. That's all coaching. Like, that's all modern-day coaching. I remember doing NBA games, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Well, the coach love you know, you got to let them know that they love you. You got to let them know, that, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, Doc Rivers has stood up for his guys. I thought one thing that was very interesting, and it was either Damian Lillard or C.J. McCollum last night on Twitter – said, well, something like that, I'm paraphrasing, well, you know, once the Clippers opted out of playing during our meeting, I knew they had no chance to be a champion. Now, I don't know the ins and outs. I'm just quoting what two guys that were in the meeting said, to your point about, right. You know, I've always felt like this. I've always felt like Paul George is a fraud. I said it on Mike and Mike. He's a nice kid and all that stuff. Doesn't know what to say. Nobody says dumber stuff than Paul George. But I've always felt like he's a total follower. Total, complete follower. Looking like he used to look for LeBron James. So he's following Kawhi. And when Kawhi didn't have it in the fourth quarter, and it's the biggest moment, and you're a follower, well, you see what happens again. So I don't disagree with any of it. And I think Doc Rivers is a fantastic guy, but I'm telling you, about 2 weeks ago, I was texting with Dan Patrick. I told him there's no chance the Clippers win. Doc Rivers' teams are poorly set up defensively. Offensively, they do absolutely nothing. They'll score points occasionally when they, you know, when they get out and run. But I think, truthfully, great guy. Love what he's been saying on all the social issues. That's fantastic. Really is. And I think he should be – I hope he's out there more. But as a coach, my God. I mean, how much – I think only Pat Riley and – I think Pat Riley and Phil Jackson, only those two guys have ever coached more talent in the modern NBA. I'm not talking about Red Auerbach and those guys. You know, I'm saying in the modern NBA. And Doc Rivers' teams look like a mess to me.
I didn't like their team. I didn't like their team. That's why I thought, you know, and it's, you know, the other thing is funny. Stephen A, when it went to 3-2, he was, you know, he said, it's still over. There's no way they can win three. Nuggets can win three in a row. But now that the Nuggets won, he's killing Max Kellerman on because Kawhi now has got to be compared to LeBron. First of all, Kawhi never asked to be compared to LeBron. You know, like this whole thing about like, you know, comparison, he was on the greatest culture in the NBA and won a championship. And then he was with Toronto, who had a lot of good pieces, and they found a way to win a championship. And he's a terrific two-way player, all that jazz. But like, it's so funny. We always want to point. I hate that everyone has to point fingers. We don't have to point like what? Kawhi's not walking around saying, I want to be compared to LeBron. He's just playing ball. I listened to a great interview with Steve Fisher yesterday talking about Kawhi. And like he's of single purpose. You know, he wants to go and compete and play ball and play the best of his abilities. And, you know, and that's just the way it is. He doesn't need all that the static around him. So I don't know. They just didn't have a good team. They had good players. They didn't have a good team. That's why I look at the Clippers. They had good players. They just didn't have a good. Sometimes you have good players and you don't have a good team.
I want to go back to something that you said about comparing people. Like I'm of the ilk in my lifetime that Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar are the two best players I ever saw. I didn't see Will. That didn't, you know, okay. But there's nobody currently now that even comes close to matching what LeBron James has done. So. Yeah. You mentioned Stephen A, and I like Stephen A, but I don't pay attention to NBA media with this stuff. It's the silliest, most overreactionary, can't wait to be the first to hype the next guy. I watch and I see Kawhi Leonard as a great player. I mean, I think he's a great basketball player and I love the way he carries himself, but
yeah.
Nobody.
LeBron is in a class by himself.
Yeah, it's a different echelon. I mean, you know, Seth, that's not to say LeBron or Kawhi can't get to that echelon. Who knows? I mean, he's a young guy. But the things LeBron did or Magic did or Bird did or Wilt did or Kareem did, hang on here a sec. You know, I mean, let's just wait a minute on all that stuff. Come on.
I'm with you. I'll tell you who we need to compare people to. We need to compare people to the great Tom Izzo because Tom Izzo is going to join us today. He's got to be excited about his guy Gary Harris, who's healthy now.
Oh,
he's really, really well for the Nuggets. He was really good. Knocked out some shots, defends, passes. But we're going to get his thoughts on there's going to be a decision made today about college basketball, when it can start, when games can start, how many games you're going to play, are you going to play non-conference games? And as we know, one thing about Tom Izzo, he's never short on opinions. And I'm interested to hear what he thinks might happen and how are they going to handle their non-conference? How many games does he think they're going to play if they have a window where they could play anywhere between 30 and whatever? How many non-conference games are you willing to play and risk exposing your team to teams? What do you think the protocol will be? All that stuff. I think it's... We're going to get great insight. Maybe break a story or two. D squared. We got our guy on, Coach Tom Izzo, joining courtside with Greenberg and Dockett. All right. We're going to first talk the NBA, then we're going to talk college basketball. All right. Is that good? First of all, congratulations, Gary Harris, Denver Nuggets advance. What was your take? I know you're watching all these games, but what was your take watching the games yesterday?
I was amazed personally. You know, I think some of my favorite coaches were all on there. You know, I'm a Doc Rivers fan. I love what Brad has done at the Celtics, but Spoelstra and I think Pat Riley might be as good a combination, although Ainge and him are a pretty good combination too. But I just loved what, the Heat and the Celtics, I thought they played so hard and did some things and made some big plays. And I was shocked. Yes, I'm pulling for Denver because of Gary Harris, but I've coached with Doc Rivers in the Goodwill games and I love Doc, but I was really amazed on what I heard after the game by the players of the Clippers when they talked about we have no chemistry and then they talked about how can you if Kawhi is missing all these games and even Paul George missing a bunch of games, and then they're two 6-Men of the Year award winners. both leave the bubble for what was said to be family reasons, and one of them for sure wasn't family reasons or didn't seem to be. So it goes to show, guys, I think Danny would agree that you can win different ways, but to win big, there's still some discipline, some structure, some accountability that has to happen. And I think that's what got the Clippers.
Hey, Coach, one of the things about getting older is you just don't care as much about what people think, right?
Yeah. It's called the KMA stage. I won't tell you what that stands for, but you're right.
I know. And, you know, one of the things, you know, we were talking about a bit off air was how hard it is to win. And you got to hold people accountable. And, you know, you do it better, I think, than anybody in college basketball. I really do. And you win bigger than anybody in college basketball. And I, what is your take, going back to Spoelstra and Pat Riley, what is your take on those two guys pushing people, developing people, and holding them accountable?
You know, Magic comes back a lot, of course, and his dad still lives here, Mom. And you know, whenever Pat Riley comes up, I mean, he just almost bows to him. He said that, you know, even back in the day, he'd come to practice in the morning and there'd be a sticker on his locker, you know, Michael scored 38 last night, Larry scored 36, what are you going to do, you know? Kind of like we would do in college, and Riley was doing that in the NBA to him. And, you know, he talked about, you know, the way he held people accountable. I think what's hard now is it's hard to develop a culture because nobody gets to stay long enough, especially if you want to change a culture, you know, and make it more disciplined and make it a little more structured without being crazy. I mean, it's not like it used to be, but I think right now they've got as good a culture, and I think Brad is really developing that at the Celtics. I've been really impressed with him, although I thought Billy Donovan was doing a pretty good job. You know, the college guys are standing up. The college guys and Spoelstra being the Ovidio guy. So hooray for all those guys. And yet I feel for Doc Rivers. I mean, you know, it makes you also wonder, are some guys, you know, I look at Paul George, I think he's a great talent. There's other great talents that are good butlers, maybe good Robins, but not good Batmans. And, you know, I sit there and watch Toronto with those two little guards, tougher than nails. They have an unbelievable year without Kawhi, and it makes you still think toughness matters. And I think Miami's one of the tougher teams. With those two forwards, they're maybe the toughest team left.
Tom, I think locker rooms. I mean, like, here's my thing. Like, maybe, and we were talking about this earlier, Dan and I, but, like, you know, Kawhi Leonard's a terrific player, but you know what? Kyle Lowry was kind of the heart of that team. You know, he played for the Spurs.
No question.
Obviously had incredible culture. When you watch the Clippers, and I agree with you because I really like Doc, I look at that team, and you always say a player-led team is better than a coach-led team. I look at that team, the Clippers, and, like, I don't find a leader. I look at timeouts. I look at huddles. When things go south, and I don't care if it's the NBA, college, junior college, middle school, you got to have someone who's coaching your locker room that has a little fight. Like the Nuggets had fight. They had you know, Jamal Murray. If you look at the joy that those guys were playing with, the Clippers looked like they played with no joy and no leadership to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm way off.
No, I think you guys are on to something there about locker rooms, man. I mean, like it or not, whether you're a LeBron fan or not, I mean, he rules that thing. All of a sudden, AD's playing the best he plays. Now Rondo's playing the best he's played in 5 years. You know, I think there's either something about culture helps it, because I don't know who the exact leader is in Miami. So culture helps it some. And yet leadership in the locker room, I think, helps it a lot. And I'm not sure you can be great without both of them. You know, I mean, you can be good. And I always say here, hey, we can win a lot of games one way, but you can only win championships the right way. And I don't think that changes in sports. I don't think it changes anywhere. I think it's all the business. I think it's all the same.
Hey, Coach, college basketball coming back, it looks like. What have you been doing since school started? Your school is... Well, your school's all online, right? What have you been doing with guys?
I'm just looking out my windows here, Danny, and and I'm not seeing anybody moving. So I got my feet up on the table, and you know what I'm probably trying to deal with more than anything is, you know, you still try to get your Zoom calls in and recruits and that, but I think keeping our players sane, you know, I'm really kind of disappointed. This is one area of the NCAA, you know, we're trying to get where we can have almost unlimited access to our players. Now, let me tell you, you coached, Seth coached. I don't want that much more time with my players as far as working them out and getting them there. I just want to be able to spend time with them, you know, like maybe play touch football, or we got to get them out of those apartments. I mean, they're laying in there taking classes online. You know, the mental health is what I'm most concerned with, but it is difficult. You can only watch so much film from last year. You know, you have some staff meetings, but it's hard to meet on stuff when you don't know what's going on. I mean, I think today or tomorrow, I think Danny Gavitt's going to lead the way, and we're going to figure exactly when college basketball is going to start. But I think, you know, there's a good chance the middle of October, and there's a good chance, you know, the middle to, you know, Thanksgiving, that we're going to start games. Football in the Big Ten starting today, it looks like it's going to be on the 24th, and that's a positive. But you know what, guys? The bottom line to this whole thing, and I'm fighting it on my campus, and I'm fighting it with every coach is talking about it. We talk about holding people accountable and discipline. Just because there's 50,000 students or 10,000 at Notre Dame, I like what that president did. I mean, he threatened them, you know? I mean, it's a joke what we're doing. I mean, the kids aren't getting sick on the court. They're not getting sick on the field. They're getting sick at the fraternity and sorority issues that we all have right now. And we all been through college and probably all did things that maybe weren't perfect at the moment. But this is a different time. And if you want to play college basketball, if you want to be a regular student and you want to go back to classes, and I mean, you got to make some sacrifices. And it's like the word's been taken out of the Webster dictionary, you know, and it's okay to sacrifice a little bit. That's why I do love what LeBron's done. You know, he talked about bringing his family and that. Nope, I'm staying focused on the task at hand. You know, I know I talked to Gary Harris. I said, you're bringing your family down. Nope, you know, and he missed 6 months. So he's trying to just focus in on what he's got to do. And I think we'll learn a lot in this respect. And you look at pro football, no issues. Pro basketball's in the bubble. Pro football's not in the bubble, but people realize they got to sacrifice a little bit to get where they want. And I think hopefully we'll do that in college basketball.
Tom, when things do come back and say we're going to play in November, how comfortable are you in terms of like non-conference schedule? How are you guys going to go about it? Because let's face it, I mean, you're going to have a certain protocol in the Big Ten. And unless all of college basketball has the same protocol, will it be difficult to decide who you're going to play, where you're going to play? You know, obviously there's going to be a limit on fans, even if you're going to have fans. You're going to have, you know, in terms of guarantee money. I mean, how are you guys going to go about putting together a non-conference schedule?
What do you think I am, the president? I don't know. I mean, all these things are good questions. You know, all kidding aside, I mean, these are things we've been discussing. I will say this. I'm on a committee that I think has done an incredible job of trying to get ahead of this. And Dan Gavitt has done an unbelievable job of, you know, trying to learn from in our league what went wrong, how did it get the way it got, and look at football, look at the pro sports. Baseball is a great example, you know. Scheduling, they went from 162 games to 60, and they had some problems early, and then they got it straightened out. And I think we'll have to make some adjustments, but nothing's going to be fair, guys. Whoever's picking on that committee, I think some teams will play 22 games, some play 29, some might play 31. You know, depending on if the virus hits your team and whether you can play all the games or within the teams you're playing, I don't think it's going to be an even playing field, and we're going to have to all accept that. And then, like for us, you know, I still think they plan on playing the Tournament of Champions, the ACC Big Ten Challenge. And so, you know, some of those big games. and it might not be as much room. We probably won't play exhibition games. I don't know that yet, but I'm saying probably won't. We probably may not play quite as many non-conference. The big worry there is, can the smaller schools test the same and put you, you know, we're going to be on everyday testing. I don't know if they can or not. I hope we can work something out, because being a Division II guy myself, you know, I still care about those smaller programs. I'm hoping we can work something out, even financially, where we might not be able to pay them the $100,000 or whatever you normally do, but work out a 2-year deal where we can get them, you know, at least some aid right now while they're struggling. This is where we really all got to band together. And if personally, I watch our country, I think we're divided, and I'm hoping that sports, you know, I love what they say, even about the racial issues, that, and you guys have all been in those locker rooms, man. There seems to be war in sports. There's no racial issues. You know, everybody bands together, those locker rooms. I mean, very seldom are you in a locker room and have to deal with that kind of stuff. And so maybe our country could learn from sports.
What are most coaches of, you know, the Bowling Greens and you know, what are they saying about their testing? I have a hard time. Like I was telling Seth a few weeks ago, like I have a hard time believing at Bowling Green when I was there that we wouldn't put ourselves in terms of testing and student athlete health on the same level as an Indiana or a Michigan State.
Yeah.
But that's a real concern, huh? And what are those schools saying?
Well, it's you know, I don't know yet, Danny, what they're saying, but I just don't think people realize the expense of this testing, you know, I mean, and now you have the heart MRIs, you know, at one time those were $4,000 or $5,000. I mean, I think they're coming down some, but there's so much more to this testing. The nasal test now, where they kind of put it up to your brain. So I've had no viruses set. They haven't found my brain yet to get to the virus. But you know, that test is, man, that could be $70 to $100. You know, and the saliva test could be $5 to $8. So it just depends, and I think where we're moving forward, both in football and basketball, is the opportunities to test at a cheaper rate and more often is getting better each and every day, you know, and that's going to, it's not going to stop it. It's not a vaccine, but it gives you a better chance. This contract tracing is what's killing everybody. You know, one or two guys get it, you're around your other players, all of a sudden you got 12 guys in quarantine, you know, and that's what's so difficult. But I've not talked to Tommy Amaker's on our one committee, and you know, Harvard is in a different situation because they're not even going to play till second semester. So I don't know, Dan. That'll be the next step here once we find out if we can schedule. But I definitely want to help those schools, and I definitely think they'll do whatever they can to, and this is where I struggle with some of the people in your profession that say, you know, well, school's got all this money. I mean, there still is a point in time. If you talk about testing 800 athletes once a week with a swab test, that could be $100. It could only be 70, but let's say it's $100 for, you know, 800 athletes. You know, even in Greenberg math, that's thousands of dollars, you know, a week. And so, those things are some of the issues with the smaller schools that I don't know. I mean, I know it's going to be difficult for the bigger schools, but we won't put anybody out there if we can't do it medically right for the student athlete. I know that for a fact.
Hey, let me just follow up for a second. So, can you clear something up for the idiots in our profession?
And by the way, love to.
By the way, I consider myself an entertainer, not part of the media, but that's all right.
I love it.
Will you please explain to people that players want to play, right?
Yeah. I mean, oh yeah.
We went, yeah. Tom, we went from the Pac-12 players making this list of demands, right? They're going to demand this demand, to now they're begging to freaking play. Players want to play. This is not unskilled or unpaid labor. These are dudes that want to play basketball, correct?
Oh, I think you're 100% right, Dan. I mean, we want to do, I mean, I think part of the problem is everybody's so afraid of lawsuits and that, and rightfully so, but the thought of a coach a commentator. I mean, you got a son in it. You know, like I don't want to get sick. I don't want to do something that's again. I just think if we take care of our business, it's not the greatest way to move forward, but that's going to happen in a lot of things. But players do want to play, and I think they're, you know, like baseball, that first 3 weeks, it was a zoo. Those guys are out every night. Now you hardly hear of a positive test. Right. You know, you adapt and overcome, you adjust, you figure out if you really do want to play. Just like I think those, you know, I mean, listen, I'm for a lot of things, but, you know, the students, you know, I mean, we tried to give 18-year-olds so much power, and I'm not for that. I say it, probably get killed for it, because I think at 18, I would have made a lot of bad decisions. You know, at 20, at 60, I make bad decisions. But definitely, you know, we're getting all these different people getting involved and wanting to unionize, wanting to do this, wanting to do that. I mean, I don't know. I struggle with those things because I've always had the best interest in the guys that played here. I always want them to get the most amount of money they can, but I also understand the college process, and I think there's a place to be a pro and a place to be a college player. And, you know, that's just my opinion. And the players want to play. And these guys, I mean, my guys have been really good with the racial inequities and all the things that we're trying to solve there. They've been really good about wanting to play. They're not always really good about the sacrifices you have to make to play, because I just don't think they totally understand. And I think our country has done a poor job of acting like, well, the 20-year-old can just get it and it's no big deal. And that's not always true either. So tough times. I mean, it's tough, but I think sports could help bring everything back if we do it right, kind of show the way, you know. And I think the NBA, I take my hat off to them. But I even like what baseball and football have done, because that's more real world. There's not the bubbles. And I talked to Steve Smith yesterday. I mean, give the NBA credit. The quarantining he has to do just to announce, I'm not sure you and Seth could make it. I mean, he is locked in a room for 10 days. I mean, in the room, gets fed in the room, gets tested right outside the room, and that's it for 10 days. You know, it was amazing. I had him even talk to our parents about it last night on a Zoom call, because I think sacrificing has got to get back in the dictionary. Accountability, we got to get those words back in, and you guys believe in it, and you guys, I think, are two that help it when you speak at games and that.
Tom, I'm 100% with you. And like, in terms of that, people don't understand, if those guys weren't with you when they were back home, they'd be playing somewhere because they just want to play.
Well, that's what really, I think that's what sometimes adults struggle with, you know. I mean, hell, even when we have them in quarantine here, they want to go over to a local gym or something, you know, and it's hard. They want to play. And yet I think they're, you know, I think the school has done a good job of trying to make them realize that it's more important. But you have such a divided country right now. It's almost like if I wear a mask, it means I'm a Democrat. If I don't wear one, I'm a Republican. If I tell a kid to play, I'm a Republican. If I tell him to not play, I'm a Democrat. You know, I mean, what happened to just, I'm sick of politics. Okay. But I said, I really want to hear from the medical people, not the political people, on what's going on. But now the last 3 weeks, I think the medical people are becoming political.
Right.
So I think I'm just going to rely on guys like you and I and Danny, and we'll see if we can straighten it out.
Tom, what if you guys do start in October, like the stuff you're doing with your teams now?
Yeah.
Conceptually, have you been able to do anything competitive?
I haven't. We were here seven weeks in the summer. I had a great summer, but it was more individual, you know, some two-on-two, but, you know, with some group work, we got the lifting in. And then we let them go for 2 weeks, and we came back, and we had one incident that spread, and now we got three or four guys that have it, and four or five that are in quarantine. So right now we're dead till next week. But what we'll start doing next week is, you know, now we get our I think they're going to at least move us to 8 hours a week where we can actually be on the floor with them. And, you know, the problem there, guys, is every state, like Danny, for the most part, you know, Indiana, I mean, kids are playing football. They're doing this. Now, IU is in a different bubble down there because sometimes it goes by counties, and it's really bizarre. But our state has been pretty strict on things. Illinois has been pretty strict on things. And so sometimes what we're allowed to do goes by your state, you know, politicians more than it does your university.
Hey, you have absolutely crushed it this summer / spring in recruiting. And I know we can't talk about specific players, but how have you gone about being so successful during this time in recruiting?
I think I found out I got a voice for recruiting, not a face for recruiting. If I don't get in that house, you know, but I also, I've said this and I don't mind saying it. I think some of the things that have helped is by kids not traveling. There's places out there that are doing it different ways and kids don't get exposed to that either. So I think we've had a couple of things that have helped here. There's been a couple of kids in our state that we've recruited for a long time. I thought my staff did a great job, but I did think we got pretty good on the Zoom calls. It's not really what I want to do, but I did realize that I'm probably better not in person.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my wife says that to me, too. I don't know if you're in a
long-distance relationship. Hey, Danny, you know when you go to those to the grocery store and they got the big plexiglass up?
Yeah.
My wife tried to put one of those in my bedroom, so you think you got problems.
That's right. My wife would make it smoke so she couldn't see me. It'd be like those
Your plexiglass is tinted.
Tinted.
Hey, Seth has to be in a different room. So think you, me and you got problems. Seth got bigger problems.
Yeah, oh yeah. Seth always.
Yeah, I'm in the guest room. So.
You know, though, all in all, guys, I do think sports could really help us if it's handled right. Now, it could be disaster if it's handled wrong, you know, and I take my hat off to the pro sports and even some of the colleges that have come back in football. I mean, I think we're trending in the right. I use Notre Dame as a great example. You know, that first week of school, if you remember, I got a friend of mine whose daughter goes there, and I mean, that place blew up. You know, they were showing pictures of everybody at the establishments, and that president, you know, came out and was pretty strict about it. And all of a sudden, I watched the game the other day, and they got, 17,000 fans in the stands, and everything seemed to go pretty smooth. I mean, it just comes down, are you willing to do some things a little different to get similar results? And if we could do that, maybe we could teach our country something, to be honest with you.
100%. 100%. Well, stay safe, man. Get your team back. When will you have all your guys out of quarantine? Like, here's a list. When you have a guy in quarantine, how do you help that kid while he's
You know, what we try to do is we try to have a lot of Zoom calls and just stay up on them. I got one assistant. Each assistant's got four players. We're just trying to – I do think there's something to the mental aspect of this now. And yeah. And we can think it's, you know, unless you go through something, I don't think you really know what it's like. And, you know, for us three, I mean, we never had anything like this in college. So, although you played for Bob down there, Danny, you were in quarantine your whole life, weren't you?
But season, there were no establishments.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, I went one time on a Sunday to buy beer from a bar owner that I knew, and I was looking around like, damn, man. I got Ube in the back seat of his car, 7'2", crouched down, scared to death. Yeah, quarantine was a way of life at IU in the 80s, brother.
You know what? Didn't work out so bad for you guys either. I mean, that's the point, you know, that, hey, look at our military people, you know, what they got to go through now. And I mean, this is different, but you know what, if we'd band together and whether you believe in some of it or not, you know, give yourself the best chance to be as safe and solid as you can and give up a little bit, you know? I mean, I look at those parties at the 4th of July or Labor Day or I'm glad we have no more holidays for a while. And I'm glad I'm in a place where Thanksgiving, it's cold up here, you know, so maybe that'll stop it. But some of that stuff to me is just blatantly insane. And we kind of deserve what we got. But, you know, I hate to say it, if some of our biggest leaders aren't buying in, then, you know, it trickles on down. And that goes in sports. It goes in business. It goes in politics. It doesn't matter where it is. So, you know what? I'm going to wear my mask and just kind of try to spend as much time helping my guys get through it. But pretty soon it's dog eat dog time again. And if you're going to be good, you're going to have to get after it. We're going to have to get after it. And I think you guys would agree with this, knowing the way you two are. You know, this is a great opportunity for somebody. Somebody is going to stay a little more disciplined than somebody else. Somebody is going to be able to sacrifice a little better. And those teams are going to move up on teams that aren't able to do that, that might be better talented teams. And that's what I've been trying to sell to my guys. You know, it's not everybody's fault. Somebody could get it walking down the street. So it doesn't mean you're at a party, you're doing something wrong. But if we could do the best job we can do in keeping everybody safe and healthy, we could move buy some teams. Because as you guys know, Danny, you especially, the damn Big Ten is going to be better than last year or the year before. I mean, there's like six teams ranked in the top 16, you know? I mean, I think we're going to be pretty good, and I think we're ranked like fourth or fifth in the league, you know, middle of the pack. So going to be really, really good for Big Ten basketball if we all get going.
And I hope so. I hope the hell we do get going, because it's going to be fantastic. Hey, boss, thanks, man. Enjoy the rest of your fall.
Thanks, Seth. Be safe.
Okay, Danny. Okay, Seth. Stay safe, guys. Appreciate you guys.
Whoopi says, keep that mask on all the time. You look better.
Stay out of the homes recruiting. Keep the mask on. I'm in business.
Well, Tom Izzo, as usual, never disappoints. But tomorrow we're going to also have a chance to react to the NCAA and guidelines for the start of the season, how many games, when we're going to start, maybe if there's a protocol involved. So we're going to have a complete podcast on the new guidelines for college basketball. But Tom Izzo, man, I'll tell you one thing, he was good.
He was great. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.